Okay, I wanted to present some recent results on multi-loop calculations. In fact, since this is a workshop, I present three results. Well, I present results and partly also work in progress. The first topic will be about two-loop form factors in the high energy limit and a massive abelian theory. The second point is, in fact, the one which is the least advanced. Some more comments about the importance of four-loop tetpole calculations. And finally, some very recent, in fact, results on massless propagators. Okay, so we had some discussion before about screensaver, but okay, so I have to go rapidly through the transparencies evidently. Okay, so has been stated before that large logarithmic corrections are important in exclusive reactions from the fact that you have large virtual contributions which are not compensated by real radiations. And in fact, for the four fermion process, the next to leading logarithms were evaluated. The important remark in this connection is that the leading logs are completely meaningless if one looks into a concrete calculation, because the next to leading logs and the next to leading logs are of equal importance for any realistic energy, say up to 10 TeV. So we have to understand whether this theory is somehow converges. Do we have to go to next to leading log, or where does this whole story end? So we are now for a slightly simplified model case at the we have the full answer, and we see that in fact there is a realistic chance to arrive at phenomenologically relevant answers. And the calculation which we performed are the two-loop results for a massive abelian theory in the high energy limit for massless gauge bosons. And in fact, there will be two cases, namely one case where we just have one massive gauge boson, and the other case, which is also of relevance for the standard model, are those contributions where one gauge boson is massless, the photon, and the other one is massive, the Z or the W. And the form factor is, of course, the simplest case, and we consider, the one loop result is simple, well known. It starts with a log square of the energy transfer divided by m square. There's a linear log with a relatively larger coefficient and an even larger constant piece. And the result which we just obtained with some methods which were originally obtained by Smirnov mainly, expansion by region, and Millimban's evaluation of the resulting integrals give us the full series in the high energy limit. So we reproduce the first three terms which we obtained earlier, which is the log 4, which is of course trivial, the log 3, which is also fairly trivial, and the log square, but the linear log and the constant piece are new. Now, what's the situation numerically? So this is the two-loop contribution to the form factor. And what's shown here is what happens by adding subsequently. You start with this curve, which is the leading log prediction. You add the next to leading order term. You add the next to leading order term, you add the linear log, and you add the constant. So it seems to separate happily enough with the after the first three terms. terms in the series. Now, the numbers which you see here are those for the form factor in a fictitious theory with a mass of 80 GeV and a gauge coupling, which is roughly the electroweak coupling. Now, that looks fairly small, 0.5%, but you have to remember that for the four-fermion process, you have twice the correction because you have four fermions, and for the rate, you have to square the object. So it's clear that we are moving around here in the percent level. Furthermore, these are fermion final states. If you go to gauge boson final states, which we didn't treat, it's clear that the color factor or the group theoretical factor is not CF but CA, so these effects are enhanced. Okay, now the other interesting case which I mentioned is the case for a theory with a large mass gap. So we have the photon, we have the massive gauge boson, and we are at very high energies. And the structure of this theory, the form factor which you expect, is the following. It will depend on two couplings, alpha, alpha prime, on the massless, or well, the nearly massless photons, a small photon mass lambda is here introduced. And in fact, the calculation is, of course, then done in dimensional regularization. And the structure is that you get all mass singularities in the normal form factor times a function which contains the massive logarithms. And this function, of course, depends on alpha and alpha prime. So there are some hard corrections sitting in this prefactor. And this is, in fact, recovered by the explicit calculation. So this prefactor contains, of course, what we had before, namely the terms, well, one loop and two loop, just the massive theory, and then an additional piece which depends on alpha and alpha prime, and which, however, has only linear logarithms. So the trivial factorization would have worked up to next to leading log. The linear log is then affected by this interplay between massive and massless theories. So that means, to me that means that we have now the main ingredients to go at least to down to the linear logs also for the four fermion interaction. That has not yet been worked out, but the main elements are present now. And probably in the end, the answer will be that what we had before in next to next to leading logarithmic approximation gives already a fairly good description of the correct answer. Okay, let me now move on to a completely different topic, namely for loop tadpoles. Yesterday in Avramik's talk, we've seen the power of expansion methods and the application or evaluation of tadpoles in the electroweak theory, in that case, at the two-loop level. Now, in fact, also some elements of three-loop calculations have had already a relevance for the electroweak theory. For example, the first three-loop calculation in the electroweak theory was performed for the rho parameter, the top quark contribution, and there are terms which are just the one-loop electroweak, dressed up with two gluons. That's one three-loop contribution. Then you can have a top quark loop with a gauge boson running around and one gluon, so that would be this term. And then this term is the top quark running around and two gauge bosons. Actually, this is not really done in the complete theory, but in the theory where the top quark is very heavy, so it's the gauge coupling is turned off, and it is only, in quotation mark, the Yukawa theory calculation. Anyhow, that is an example of the importance of three-loop in electroweak and of tadpoles. evaluation of R of S, the famous R ratio in order alpha S squared for massive quarks, is also based on this approach. And the evaluation of charm and bottom quark masses from moments. Let me just illustrate that quickly. What is the point here? You have the vacuum polarization function pi, the derivatives at Q squared equals zero, and you can calculate that in perturbation theory on one side, so these coefficients are all known. On the other hand, the vacuum polarization function through dispersion relations is given by the R ratio, and if you take derivatives at Q squared equals zero, you obtain moments. Experimental moments, which are equated with the theory moments, and that gives you the charmed quark mass, or the bottom quark mass. And that is possible to calculate at three-loop level. In fact, the basic strategy goes back to a fairly old paper by David Broadhurst, and then this was formalized and implemented in a form program method, and that is in fact the machine which was used in all these calculations for three-loop tetpole integrals. So the answer which we obtained some time ago is shown here for charmed and bottom quark mass, and the point is that this 50 MeV uncertainty in MB and this 30 MeV uncertainty in M charm are still driven to some extent by theory uncertainties, or at least there's some discussion going on whether higher order perturbation theory may, well, whether this is compatible. So we go to four loop tetpoles. And this is really a qualitatively new step. And we try, and this is now work in progress, the calculation along two routes. One is an algebraic solution that is done together with Mastrolia, a PhD student of mine. And here, the situation is as follows. Well, the generation of these four loop diagrams, the amplitudes is simple. Now, because step three, the reduction to master integrals, is so much effort, it is extremely important to classify the diagrams properly. So that means to really find those which are identical, to exploit all sorts of symmetries, to find those which have factorizing topologies, or those which actually have products of massless tetpoles, which we then, of course, have to put to zero, can put to zero right away. So that is fairly far advanced. And the reduction to master integrals is then the basis of concepts developed by Laporta and the program SOLVE, which solves for you whatever you want it to solve by Ettore Remedy. However, in the moment we are partly stuck, or it's not quite clear how we can process, because we have huge numbers of linear equations. We get results for simpler topologies, namely those which have fermion bubbles inside, so there's just a smaller number, the situation is simpler. The thing seems to work, so for the n light square terms, we do have a result, but we feel there's still some way to go. Another approach is a numerical approach, which in a way looks fairly straightforward, namely, since we claim that we can calculate three loop propagators with one internal mass scale, we should just cut a four loop tetpole and have one integral over an object which is now a three-loop propagator integral. So you just do, you're left with a numerical one-dimensional integration if this function, this propagator function is given. And so we should just calculate a function with one internal mass scale, three-loop, for arbitrary Q square. Now, that is not possible analytically, but it is possible with some tricks. Namely, again, we use the three loop cat pose to obtain expansions at small q square, and we use the techniques of asymptotic expansions to obtain the function at large q square, and then you have so much information that the function is really squeezed from both sides, and you obtain a fairly good description of the full function, for example, then through Padé approximation and conformal mapping. Now, we played with a test example, which is this four loop tetpole with all lines massive and just scalar propagators. A result for that is available by Laporta. And so we check and we cut this four loop tetpole in two ways, either the red cut or the green cut, which then gives rise to two completely different propagator diagrams, which are shown here. And we calculate these propagators and do the integral then numerically. And so we can compare the result for cut one and the result for cut two in units of 10 to the minus 5. And now you see we have to inject high energy input for the propagator, for this propagator, and low q square input for the propagator. So that gives the number of terms in the expansion which we use, and the same here, so for the two cuts. But in the end, when you inject enough terms in the expansion, you always get precisions at the level of 10 to the minus 10. Now, in fact, in the realistic case, you probably don't want to have 10 to the minus 10. You're happy with 10 to the minus 5, which affects, of course, the amount of computation which you have to do, because you have not only one diagram, but many. And, well, we are on the way. Last point, the other extreme, namely no masses whatsoever, massless propagators. And that I would really call the long march towards alpha s to the 4. And I don't know how many people will die away on that long march until we arrive at the final end. Why is this nevertheless of some value? First of all, the R tau, which is of course also based on this whole thing, just uses estimates for the alpha s to the 4 term. If they would just drop the alpha s to the 4 term and would base their error estimate on the last calculated term, which is the alpha s to the 3 term, then the whole beauty of the alpha s determination from tau decays would fade away completely. So what's done in practice is the alpha s cube term in tau decays is used, an estimate based on principle of minimal sensitivity for the alpha s to the 4 term is used, and then this number is just taken as the result with a little bit of variation of the alpha s to the 4 term, and you really would like to know whether this is justified. Even more so, I think I don't know whether I dare to say that here, but I think, say it nevertheless, I think the alpha s determination from the total cross-section is far superior to alpha s determinations from jet analysis. If you look already now, we have the NNLO term, and it would be a quite interesting game to study what happens if you drop, again, the last calculated term, what is the impact on the error estimate. Okay, anyhow, so I think this R ratio is important. At LEP, the theory is comparable to the experimental error. At GigaZ, the theory error is dominant, but I would like to draw your attention that we do have already now a data set on tape which would allow an Alvord S determination which would beat all the others. Namely, it's just the R measurement at the B factory, which has millions of events, which has, because the energy is lower, a larger sensitivity to alpha S, and therefore, just more sensitivity to alpha S. On the other hand, it has a larger sensitivity to the higher order effect, simply because of the lower energy. Okay, so that's the motivation. Now, if you want to go to the alpha S cube, you need a couple of ingredients. Namely, in a way, the alpha S to the 4 term is based on the divergent part of a 5-loop massless correlator, because that gives you the logarithmic piece, which, if you then take the absorptive part, gives you the quantity which you're interested in. Now, the one important step is that this divergent part of the one of the 5-loop correlator can be obtained if you control the finite part of 4-loop diagrams. That is an idea of Kostec-Chetyrkin. So it is a completely formalized approach. There's an automatized algorithm which maps the divergent part of the 5-loop to the calculation of finite part of 4-loop propagators. However, with more and more dots, which means higher powers of the propagator. Qualitatively, this is not such a big surprise that this is possible, but to really do it is non-trivial. But the real bottleneck now is to calculate the finite part of 4-loop massless propagators with high powers of the propagators, of the internal propagators. And just to show the difference between 3 and 4-loop, so there's the celebrated Mincer diagram, the Mincer program written by various people, implemented in form, and that has three topologies without insertions, 14 topologies with of that type with insertions, and in the end there are 6 master integrals. Now here we have a far larger number of topologies, we have more master integrals, and so the problem just is of a completely different dimension. So if you compare Mincer, it has really the feature that this integration by parts identities were solved manually and implemented for 14 different topologies in the program. And this was a effort which went over a year or years. Now here we have 150 topologies, far more complicated identities, so a straightforward generalization of Mincer would be difficult. Okay, now comes Pavel Bykov, and he had the following suggestion. The strategy, what do we want to have? We want to have an arbitrary diagram which depends on the topology, on the power of propagators, and on the dimensionality, on the space-time dimension D, expressed in terms of masters, and the function which depends on the topology, the power of the propagator, and D. Now, this function here is just a rational function of D. Masters we can calculate. So the main effort is to obtain this function of B. And the important step now is that in the large D limit, this quantity, the calculation, can be mapped into a calculation of Gaussian integrals, which is a completely algebraic approach. So the trick is that you use the Schwinger parametrization, and in the large D limit, the remaining integrals are all Gauss integrals. Okay, and so you just calculate this function in the large D limit. You calculate sufficiently many terms, and then you just reconstruct the rational function if you have enough terms by applying Padilla, but not approximation. Clear, you can calculate this, reconstruct this quantity. So it's only the calculation of the coefficients in the large D expansion. However, in practice, that means, okay, you have to handle polynomials of ninth degree. The degree is given by the number of independent numerators which remain in such an integral, and the number of propagators which you have to integrate. So it's the number of Schwinger parameters. And the degree k depends on the power of the, well, on the depth in D which you have to expand, and on the power of the propagators within the Feynman diagram. So you end up with just a huge number of terms. And the trick, of course, is that if you have some ideas what this rational function is, and you get some experience about typical zeros in the numerator and the denominator, that helps a lot. And so what's the status? The for loop NF terms are done, and in fact, they're done to the extent that the alpha s to the 4 and f to the 3 and the alpha s to the 4 and f square terms are fully available. That's published. What's new and unpublished is that there's a trick now which allows to solve all relevant master integrals analytically with a cut and glue technique, which I don't have the time to describe here. And we have the complete for loop mass corrections to the R ratio. So the situation is a bit funny in the following sense. We don't have the massless answer, but we do have the mass corrections to the massless answer. Well, as it happens, that is simpler because if you expand in the mass, the resulting pi is finite. So this is a physical object, whereas here the thing is divergent. So here you really just have to do the massless for loop propagator, and that's it. And then you just use renormalization group tricks to obtain the desired result. So this is, in fact, the first for loop result of these quantities. So it goes up to zeta of 7. So you have the constant part in pi 2. So it starts with 8, alpha s squared, and so on. The nf squared, the nf term was obtained before. That's what I showed. And now we have the constant piece. And, okay, so that's what it is numerically. And it has at least some physics quantity as a result, although the relevance, the phenomenological relevance is not so big. So these are the mass corrections to the R ratio. And so the exact result is 128 alpha s to the 4. It's in fact not too far away from the predictions based on principle of minimal sensitivity or fastest apparent convergence. It's significantly away from naive non-abelization, so I think it's still some relevance. And in a while, we hopefully will see what happens to the quantity which is sitting here. Okay, so let me... Oh, and I should say this number also has a relevance for the strange quark mass determination in tau decays. There it really gives additional useful input. Okay, so I think Sudakov logarithms will be a topic also for the next couple of years, probably or perhaps also at hadron colliders. Subleading terms are large. I expect that the first three terms in the logarithmic approximation should give typically a valuable answer. Nevertheless, it's useful to control at least the next term, so the linear term in the logarithm. I'm sure that the four-loop massive tetpoles will be done relatively soon, either by us. I think there are also two more groups working on that topic in the moment. And the massless propagators, I'm not aware of anybody else working on that. I think partial results are available. The thing will be possible in probably 2 years or something like that. And it would be, combined with the proper measurement, the best, most precise, and theoretically safe result for alpha S.
In your comment about the relevance of having four loops for R e plus e minus, my impression was that already the experimental error at LEP on the Z-pole was like a couple of percent, 3%, I'm not quite sure, and the theoretical error is less than 1%, so I think we already have, as theorists, done our job and beaten the experiment. Certainly good to make it even better, but could you comment on the numbers?
Yeah. Well, different error estimates have been made for the... Well, we have had the issue of theoretical errors again and again, and different error estimates have been made on that quantity. If I would make an error estimate for the R ratio on top of the Z, as courageous as tau people do, then of course the theoretical error is practically zero on top of the Z. If I take the last calculated term as an error estimate, then theory and experiment are comparable. But the other aspect which I wanted to emphasize is, first of all, that GigaZ claims to do a significant factor better. And the last thing is, I believe that, that's what I emphasized, that there are millions of E plus E minus to hadron events on tape at B factories, they only in quotation marks have to be analyzed.
I have a question to the Sudakov logarithms. At the very leading log level, the pure Sudakov logs, they seem to exponentiate and factorize in terms of an electromagnetic factor and a purely weak factor. To which level do you expect will this hold? Also at the next leading level or next to next?
Well, yeah, there is something, well, the evolution, I mean, exponentiate has to be specified more precisely here. I mean, there are evolution equations for the Sudakov logarithm, which are valid, and in fact, they are constructed quite similar to the evolution equations for Sudakov logs in QCD. And there have been some discussion whether this approach is valid. And now, at least for the form factor, we have shown that it works. Yes. So you can get information about the...
But to which level?
To all orders.
To all orders, but yes. I think I saw one single lock that did not really factorize.
Understand. Okay, factorization does not just mean that you can multiply things. You have to do some matching in between, and in fact this one term, this alpha primed term, was in fact what you would call a matching coefficient or factor, which connects the theory with no massless gauge boson and this factor which multiplies and soft singularities.
Time for one more question.
So Johann, when is the turnover actually when you just go to a complete numerical method to calculate this for loop massless propagators? I mean, it's possible nowadays. I mean, we unfortunately we don't get more clever, but the computers get more fast. So I mean, nowadays one can write down. It's true, isn't it? Nowadays you can write down Feynman parameter representation, and for the massless propagators, I mean, it's trivial to get a numerical stable answer for loop massless propagators. It was demonstrated, and you could do it in this way.
Wait. I mean, the masters we have analytically. So what you would have to solve is the complete thing. But any method is welcome. I mean, so whoever gets something, I don't think that analytical calculation per se in that case has a particular value.
We have to move on now. A coffee break also, and let us speak again.